I'll go ahead and get started. It's the Senate State Affairs meeting. It is Thursday, let's see what today's date, February 3rd at 3:35 in the afternoon. Today what we've noticed for the hearing is just sort of an overall overview of the regulatory process here in the state of Alaska. All members here were members of the legislature last year when a package of three pieces of legislation went through the process that has changed the way regulations are drafted and the way they're administered, and also gave a final out for constituents if they got caught in an endless loop in the regulatory process. So I, since State Affairs has overview of the Department of Administration, where much of this function takes place, as far as the administration of regulations, I thought it would be good to just have an overview. So we've broken it into different parts, and first we've got Deb Baer with the Attorney General's Office, Department of Law.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Deborah Baer, and I'm Regulations Attorney for the State of Alaska, and I'm employed by the Department of Law. And I have been Regulations Attorney since 1991, and I'm pleased to give you some information today about how regulations are developed in the state, and also to report a little bit on the administration's interface with the new regulatory review process. As part of my materials today, I've provided you with a set of exhibits, and they're in the blue folders on your desk, and that can give you some ideas of where we're going to be going today. First, on the report on the implementation of the regulation review process with the legislature, last year the legislature passed House Bill 424, which formalized the legislative review process of administrative regulations, and I've included in the packet on exhibits number, a copy of the bill, exhibit number 5, and exhibit number 6 is the flow chart on the training materials that I've used for state agencies. What I wanted to assure you is that the administration is taking this review process very seriously, and we've found it quite successful. I've done training of over 100 administrative agency personnel on the process, and I've trained over 40 assistant attorney generals. I've also prepared an updated manual, which is available online for anyone about the new process, and I've worked closely with the legislative attorneys on trying to make sure that the process is successful and working. And the feedback I'm hearing is that the regulations in the state of Alaska have improved as a result of the process. The regulation review process with the legislature interfaces at the notice process, so what I thought I'd do today is go over what's a regulation in the state of Alaska and how this new regulation process fits in with it quite well. If you look to the folder on the left side with exhibit number 1, that sets up, the legislature has told us what is a regulation in the state. And frankly, we have one of the broadest definitions of regulations in the nation. It's very, very broad. And it basically, if it's a standard of general application, if we're going to enforce a standard against the public, then it's got to go through the Administrative Procedures Act. It is a regulation, and we have to give the public notice and an opportunity to comment before their rights are affected. And so the main thing is that we must have a statute on the books in order to adopt regulations. State agencies just can't decide they want to do regulations. The legislature has to say, yes, there's a program, and yes, we would like you to do regulations. And on that definition, if you look at the very bottom on Exhibit 1, the legislature has said to us through this statute is, we don't care what you call it, if it's a manual, if it's an interpretive bulletin, we want you to go through this public process of notice and comment so the public has a right to tell us what they think about the regulation.
I might be lost, but I'm not. What's your Exhibit 1 look like?
It's,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, I'm sorry, it's on the numbers on the side. Okay, let's go to Exhibit 2, and that might be a little easier. This is the steps in the regulation process, and it's a flow chart. First of all, when I talk with state agencies, I tell them, please spend a lot of time in planning and decision-making, because if you don't think of all the alternatives and who's going to be impacted by it, you have a lot of unintended consequences. So that's step one, and that's what the agency should be doing. They develop their notice, their draft regulations, and their fiscal note in consultation with the Department of Law. We then open up a file and put it on block number 5. We're at the point where we distribute it publicly to the public by way of the newspapers. We have an online public notice system. We have interested person lists, and the public can get copies of regulations as well. And then we have a public comment period that's required by statute where the public can tell us what they think about the regulations. And we have oral hearings when appropriate on particular regulations. I'm now at block 7 on the flowchart. The agency adopts those regulations. If it's a board or commission, they have to do it in a publicly noticed meeting. If it's a department, the commissioner would adopt it, the highest person in the department. Then it goes to the Department of Law for our legal review, and then finally it ends up on my desk or my section's desk to do a legal review to approve or disapprove the regulations for filing by the Lieutenant Governor's office. The Lieutenant Governor's office then files the regulations, and they take effect usually 30 days thereafter. And at that point, the agency posts a summary on the online public notice system so that people can know that their rights are affected, and they're published in the code so that people know what their obligations or responsibilities are under them. Frequently, I get a question about people will call you asking about new regulation projects and what's going on and how can I get information about it. So what I thought would be helpful to you is give you exhibit number 3, which is a list of agency contacts so that, yep.
Excuse me, Senator Elbert, before we move on to the next exhibit, a question. I mean, what happens between box 6 and box 10 or 11, I guess? What happens if, in fact, after the post-public hearing reviews, the regulations are changed substantively? Mm-hmm. Do we have an arrow that then takes us back to the public comment period?
It can, and that's an excellent question. Suppose someone comments that, look, this regulation didn't go far enough. I really think you should look at this, this, and this. Well, that topic, the additional topic, was not noticed to the public. That's not fair. So it needs to go back through the notice process, and the public has a right to comment on it. If there are changes that are as a result of public comment, like someone looks at a section and says, it's not clear, I don't understand it, I want a definition of X, that's not the kind of thing that has to go back through the public comment process. So it depends on the level of it. And when I talk with commissioners, I always say, when in doubt, go out again for another public comment period. The public doesn't want to be surprised. They want to know what's going on. So if you have a major change, the public has valuable information that we don't necessarily have. And you can never be wrong going out for another public comment. But I hope I've answered your question.
You did. Thank you. Okay. Just a generic question, if I could, Mr. Chair. Deb, I noted in box 11 there's a time frame. I mean, there are no time frames that apply to anything that happens earlier in the process?
That's an excellent question. There's a couple that apply by statute. For example, from the time of a box 5 notice, the commissioner notices. The commissioner cannot do a box 7 adoption until at least 30 days have passed. So that's a statutory deadline. The whole process, we tell state agencies, it's not fair to surprise the public, which is if I give a notice in July, the public has a reason to believe that they're going to have a decision on it in a reasonable time period. If it takes more than a year, we tell them it's not a reasonable time period, start over again and give a notice on it. But that's not a statutory requirement. It's a constitutional, and it's something we've followed at the Department of Law for a long time. It's a due process issue.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, that last point that within a year you should have wrapped things up or you go out for notice again?
That's the standard the Department of Law uses, yes.
So you referenced no sooner than 30 days.
Right.
And you say, but we also have a no later than a year.
Yes.
Or else you go out again.
Yeah,
and, of course, you've got the underlying statute, the thing that quite often it's a statute change that has triggered this, a new program, and people want to get the program into place, too. So you've got that pressure saying, well, we can't do it until we get the regs in place. So there's a couple things that...
Oh, there's an amazing amount of pressure on trying to get regulations in place so your project can operate efficiently. Because if you don't have the regs in place in this state, I'll tell you, you'll lose in court.
Okay.
Our Supreme Court will not hesitate to call us on that definition of regulation and say, start, you know, your permit doesn't work, your project has to start over the rate card.
I specifically
I was just thinking
All right. If we have no further questions, I'll go on to Exhibit 1. If you have a question, if you have a constituent that says, I heard there's a reg project, I want to know what's going on. Exhibit 3 is the contact list for all departments. So, if, for example, it was a Department of Administration regulation, you would be contacting Mike Tibbles, who happens to be the AAC contact for the Department of Administration, and he would be able to direct you as to what department person was assigned to that kind of process. Also, a number of the departments have very nice web pages right now. I've been really impressed with them, and you can go on the web pages and get more information. DNR particularly does a very good job with that. I oftentimes get questions from people in the public who say, I think there's a regulation on fees or whatever. How do I find it? And I wanted to give you, by exhibit number 4, websites so that you can direct constituents to them, because a lot of people live in remote areas of Alaska, or their time frames are such that they can't really get to the downtown library. They're now, right now, my manual is on the Internet, the regulations are on the Internet, and the online public notice is on the Internet. Robert Pearson is here from the Lieutenant Governor's Office. You have more questions about that. But if you had a business person saying, I want to make sure I'm on top of what the state of Alaska is doing in some kind of fee or some kind of occupational licensing thing, they can check the online public notice for reg projects, or they can get on the interested person list for the affected department. So that's a way that your constituents can track what's going on in state government regulations. I also get usually a question from people who are surprised by a regulation when it's first enforced against them. In other words, they were not aware the regulation was out there until they finally got dinged for it. And how can I change it? It doesn't work with my business or whatever. The Administrative Procedures Act, the legislature has put a petitioning procedure in it to allow you to petition for reg changes in regulation. And I have found a lot of good, successful, productive changes through that process. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
It's good to hear that your assessment is that the new process with legislative oversight early in the process has been helpful.
Oh, absolutely. It's excellent. I like the timing of it. It's really productive because then it comes very on early in the project so that we can get comments and we can get helpful changes, and they can also give early warning to you of issues that you want to track a little closer.
The review chair.
I was reg review chair for the last 2 years. Now I'm vice chair. Yeah. Okay, next we have Terry Lauterbach, attorney with Legislative Legal Services. And for the members, I think in all of your packets there was this exhibit number 2, which showed the whole flow chart. And basically, with the adoption of the new system, we added a box between 4 and 5, or what's next to number 5, where our legislative attorney then gets a early look at the regulations. And everything in that new box is actually shown here on exhibit number 6. And you might think, well, geez, you didn't streamline things very much if you stuck between 4 and 5, you know, about 10 new boxes. But I think this points out all the different possible steps. And actually, Terry, why don't we have you just go over how, in fact, that works.
For the record, I am Terry Lauterbach. I've been with the division since 83 in various capacities. I semi-retired 2 years ago, but they called me back last year to train in a couple of replacements, and I'm back part-time again this year to try to get this off the ground, and that is the only thing I do. As you probably know, during session, drafting attorneys would not have time for regulation review, and so I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but this session, that's what I'm doing. So far, I would echo what Debbie has said, that the relationship between legal and the agencies has been very good. They've responded to my questions promptly, and they admit when they've made errors and when they're going to reconsider their language, if I've suggested that. I don't know at what point who will follow up to see if they actually make the changes that I suggested and that they've agreed to, but at least they've said they will. It was my understanding that everyone had a copy of the memo that I sent to you about the review process, and maybe it'd be more fruitful to respond to questions that that might have raised.
I'm sorry, we don't have it in the packet, so.
Is it your pleasure that I sort of read that into the minutes, or?
But you need to read it in, but if you wanted to just go over it verbally, perhaps.
Would you all like a copy of the statute? I think it's also in Debbie's
statute.
The House Bill 424 that established this process. Okay, well, I would say that in reference to the boxes on Exhibit Number 2, we're actually contemporaneous with 5 and 6. Our review takes place not between 4 and 5, but during the public comment period. Emailed notices of proposed regs go to the affected standing committee that would have jurisdiction, like a health and social services reg would go to the health committee. At the same time, it comes to me in a special email box for these proposed regs. At that time, I would start a review if I wasn't already working on something. And the law sets a priority that I'm supposed to review proposed regs that implement new or change state statutes first. So if it's that kind of reg, no one needs to ask me to do a review. I'm automatically doing those. If it's not that kind of reg, if it's just updating some references or establishing a new direction within a statutory authority that was broad to start with, and the agency just decides to implement it differently, a program, but it's not really implementing a change in a statute, then that kind of review wouldn't happen unless I had all the other kind of reviews done. Now, there's a second avenue under the law to give priority to the work I do, and that's if a standing committee or the Legislative Council makes a written determination that the proposed regs implicate major policy development, is the phrase used in the statute. So, for instance, if your committee received a set of regs or knew about a set of regs that you thought implicated major policy development and wasn't implementing a new law, which means I would be looking at it anyway, you could send me that written determination and request a review of the regs, and any other standing committee can do that too. And that would, those kinds of regs have second priority. I think there was a good recognition that there are so many regs out there that there had to be some priorities established, and those are the two categories that are given priority. I would note, since this is a standing committee, part of what the memo talked about is some limitations in the law, and I don't know if this was an oversight or on purpose, but under subsection G of 2420-105, it says that LAA may not release any information regarding a review, except as described in this section. And in that section, it tells me exactly who I send my written determinations to. And it's the Administrative Regulation Review Committee. It's the presiding officers. And when it involves legislative intent, and I also send it to the Department of Law and state agencies. It does not say that I can send a copy of that determination to the standing committee who may have requested my review. It says I can consult the requester, but it does not say I can send them a copy of the report. And reports are not sent out unless I do find a problem. Nothing is sent out. No news is good news, basically. So there's no way to tell you how I've come out in my review. If you've requested one on a set of regs that implicates major policy development, if a committee ever utilizes that option. So I think that's something that probably ought to be fixed, but it's up to some legislator or committee to request a bill. In the meantime, if you don't hear from me after you request a review, that's why. I cannot, because of this, tell you about any specific review that I may have done, but if you want me to, I can give you an idea of how many reviews I've done in general and general outcomes.
Mentioned the possible change that you made.
Mm-hmm.
When we were dealing with the adding to the statutes, we were trying to keep control of the number of reports that are just flying around, and
mm-hmm.
I guess there's no bar that if somebody requests a review, they can follow up later on and say, have you completed that? Did you find anything?
Well, the statute is pretty clear. LAA may not release any information regarding a review except as specified in the section.
Well,
and the requester is not specified.
Would they be able to ask if you've just completed a review?
I think that I could probably answer that, but not how the review came out. So I don't think it'd be a very fruitful question.
Senator Elton.
On that topic, Terry, when the statute says that you will notify the reg review committee, do you notify all members of that committee or just the chair and vice chair?
We notify the chair.
The other concern I would have, Mr. Chair, is that there would be no notification to any legislator in most circumstances that was a member of the minority caucuses. So if, in fact, I can't remember Terry's precise language, implication of a major state policy shift, there would be no notification to a member of the minority party.
Well, we can certainly, take a look at the suggestions in the memo and consider possible legislation. Now, how about just some information on the total number of reviews that you've, and you came on in the position at when?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the bill became effective October 26th, so nothing before that had to go through this process, and that's when I started.
And so what's the total?
So about 3 months. We're talking about 3 months. Excuse me. I've received 18 sets of regulations in that time, and I reviewed 16 of them. 8 of those 18 were based on new or changed state statutes, so I reviewed all 8 of those. Interestingly enough, 7 were for SLA 2004, and 1 implemented a statute passed in 2002. Because it related to a kind of insurance for which we had no insurers until recently. And so a regulation wasn't needed. So sometimes the newer changed state statute was not necessarily just the last legislature. So I reviewed all 8 of those, and I issued 4 reports. The standards I'm supposed to use are in the statute, mostly about statutory authority, constitutionality, consistency with the statutes. The types of problems I've been discovering so far are primarily drafting errors, such as obsolete references to repealed statutes, inconsistent or inaccurate internal references to other regulations. Some regulations have also been too unclear for readability and enforceability. 2 reports involved, among other things, whether the agency was interpreting the authorizing statute correctly. 1 involved a gap in the regulations where part of the law was not implemented. And except for the 2 instances where there's been disagreement as to whether the regulations properly interpret the statute, the state agencies have agreed to make either the corrections I've suggested or to reconsider the clarity of the language involved. As I mentioned a little while ago, they've said they'll reconsider and they've said they'll make the changes. We'll see in the final regs if they actually do, but no one has the duty to make sure that happens. There have been no sets of regs designated by a committee as comprising major policy development, so there have been none of those kinds of reviews yet. As to the other kinds of regulations, I have been able to get to the non-priority ones. There were 10 of those, and I reviewed 8. 4 made minor changes in occupational licensing regs. 2 focused on updating references to outside sources like medical diagnostic codes, federal manuals, and 2 made minor language changes, and there have been no reports that I issued about those. none of them had anything deficient enough to comment on.
And one of the issues with regards to the agencies can indicate that they're going to take the suggestions to heart and make the changes. We, the legislature, don't have the power to force those regulations. And that's why, you know, we've gotten a sneak peek. We can make suggestions and put things back on track where we think there's a divergence of view or what was intended by the legislature. But we really have no power. This is really an administrative function that the administrator, the governor, carries out under his branch of government. And if at the end we determine that we made a suggestion, they said they were going to take it, you know, make that change, and they don't, you can pass changes to this underlying statute, you know, that's the power we exercise. But I think, you know, the indications are that it's a good collaborative arrangement so far. That's the way it's working out from the get-go here, and hopefully it just leads to better, more understandable regulations that are really what the legislature intended. Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Before I ask the question, I'm going to apologize to those who have yet to testify. I have a conflict at 4, so I'll probably leave after Terry addresses the question. Terry, I'm trying to get some sense of how much time you're required to put in, and you come into the process after Box 4, when the Department of Law opens a file and then they notify you. I mean, if you think there are potential problems, I mean, are you expected, for example, to sit in on the public hearings, or I mean, is yours mostly just a paper review of language, trying to match language with statute?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, it's the latter. Exactly. It's a legal review. Not as extensive as what the AGs do at the end of the process, because they're also making sure the agencies jumped all the hoops and timelines and turned in all the right pieces of paper. Mine's more like when I was a reviser and did a bill review of what drafters turn in before it goes out of the office. Sort of more like quality control, only with less ability to comment on clarity and more focus on comparing the statute to the regs, just like you said, seeing where there are differences. I email my questions to the agency that proposed the regulation, and sometimes they can answer to my satisfaction. They educate me, because I don't know all of the subject matter of all of these agencies, obviously. So sometimes they educate me as to why the regulation says one thing when it looks like the statute says something else. But sometimes they don't answer that to my satisfaction, and then I put that in my report, that this doesn't look like it matches the statutes. Here's what the agency said. You guys decide. Yeah.
Thanks for coming back. I apologize, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. And then finally, we have Terry Thurbin, who is the new administrative law judge in the Department of Administration. The second piece of legislation that was passed dealt with having an independent arbiter of the regulations. If you have a constituent that is challenging a regulation or looking for an appeal, goes for an appeal of a determination that's been made under the regulation, rather than have somebody in the department who wrote the regulations, who works with the people who made the decision on the regulations, now acts as a judge on the regulations. We've collected all the hearing officers from many departments, pulled them together under Terry. So there's an arm's length between the judge and the people that wrote the law. So Terry, why don't you tell us about implementing your part of the new system?
Well, thank you. I'm Terry Thurbin, the acting chief administrative law judge for the Office of Administrative Hearings. And I appreciate the committee inviting me here to provide an overview. I'm looking for every opportunity I can these days to let folks know that the Office of Administrative Hearings is actually up and operating, and we have been operating as an organizational unit since January 1st. It's been a pretty wild ride for the first several weeks, but we are continuing to perform our core function which is to provide adjudication services, hearings. But let me just back up briefly and refresh everybody about the history of the bill here and the status. Only four operative provisions of Senate Bill 203 that was passed last year are actually in effect right now. There was the provision that created the office, the provision that created the Chief Administrative Law Judge position, a provision to allow us to work on regulations in the interim until the rest of the bill kicks in July, and a provision, a transition provision, that allowed for the Departments of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Revenue, and Administration to agree to the transfer of hearing officers and hearing functions. And we set about doing that. It was something that was contemplated would be done sometime between January 1st and July 1st when most of the rest of the Senate Bill 203 provisions come into effect. We made the decision that we wanted to make that happen as soon as we could. So we arranged for the transfer of the employees and their functions effective January 1st. And with those employees came 321 open cases. And that's reflected on the bar chart handout that we gave you. The surprising thing was that immediately after the transfer of those open cases, as we were working our way through getting our case management system operating, continuing to conduct hearings without really losing much of a beat, in the first 30 days of operations, we received another 100 referrals. So if that's a sign of things to come, we're not going to want for work in the future. The handout that I provided also shows you, by contrast, the breakdown between four sort of conveniently dividable categories. The biggest portion of our caseload comes from revenue, and it's represented especially by child support services cases and permanent fund cases. That's probably between 70-75% of our caseload. But you'll see that we also have a pretty heavy occupational licensing caseload, and the interesting thing about that is, when you think of occupational licensing, it sounds like one category, but it's really about 35 or 40 categories of licensing-type activities that mostly involve boards and commissions decisions. In some instances, the docket that came over from Commerce also includes cases that are commissioner-level final decisions, where our hearing results in a final decision that's acted upon by the commissioner of the department. But most of the time, it's boards and commissions, and I think there are at least two dozen, maybe closer to three dozen boards and commissions that are involved there. So we're still working on getting our arms around the interaction and the relationship that our administrative law judges, who previously were employees of these departments, are going to continue to have. But we think that going forward, in addition to providing the basic hearing function, the function of allowing parties to have their fair hearing opportunity in an efficient and cost-effective manner, as Senate Bill 203 contemplated, so that they have their opportunity to present evidence and get an objective proposed decision that ultimately will be acted upon by the final decision maker, be that a commissioner, a board, or a commission. In addition to that, we're finding that there's a need for our administrative law judges to, in some instances, there's going to be a need for them to continue to operate as almost a legal advisor, especially to the boards and commissions, when the time comes for them to deliberate on our proposed decision before they make a final decision. So we're finding that our core function that I like to call hearings isn't really all about hearings. It's about the lead-up to hearings and resolving some matters on what we think of as motion practice, short of having an evidentiary proceeding. And we are looking at opportunities also to divert some of those cases to an alternative dispute resolution type process, the simpler the better, to resolve them short of having to go to an evidentiary hearing. But where evidentiary hearings are necessary, we're conducting those, preparing proposed decisions, except in the cases where final decision-making authority is delegated to us. And then those proposed decisions are going forward and being acted upon by the final decision maker. And we think it's working pretty well so far, and it's still very early days. We're still under the regulations that the departments already had in effect and the procedures that already applied, because one of our additional important functions is to develop our own regulations for hearing procedures. we need to, we don't have to have that done by July 1st, but the goal that I've set is to do as much as we can to have our regulations development function well underway, if not completed by July 1st. And I'm quite sure that that Deb will gasp when she hears me say that that is our ambition, because we have two major regulations projects. We have the procedural regulations for the conduct of the hearings, and on top of that, we need to develop a code of conduct for hearing officers. And that includes not just the administrative law judges within our own unit, but all hearing officers within the state system. So the regulations function of developing our regulations is an important one that we're making every effort to get underway and going to pursue pretty ambitiously. The other part of our regulations duty, if you will, is a review of other agencies' regulations that pertain to the process of hearings. And that is something that we'll be doing on an ongoing basis for the future. That's not something I expect to see an end to. And we haven't yet had a particular regs packet pop up in just the last few weeks that we've had occasion to provide feedback on, but we're kind of getting organized to be in a mode to be able to do that. So that covers our hearing function, our regs development and review function. But in addition to that, there are probably four other functions that I just wanted to remind everybody were assigned to our office, because I think they're exciting functions, things that are going to be an important part of the process. One is peer review. We're supposed to do peer review internal to our office, not of other administrative law judges' hearings and decisions. But that is an important part of achieving consistency in the decisions that we make, as between the current six administrative law judges, including myself, achieving consistency so that we don't have one administrative law judge who's very in tune with the way the boards and commissions have ruled on certain kinds of cases in the past, deciding in a particular way because of his or her knowledge of the sort of the precedents, and then somebody that we bring in new goes a different way just because they don't have the same background. We're using the peer review process to try to achieve greater consistency in the decision-making across our own group, to try to achieve better clarity in the decision-writing, and also as a training opportunity for people who are beginning to work in areas that they hadn't worked in before. So I'm really grateful that that was called out in the legislation as something that was a mandatory requirement that we do peer review internal to ourselves. But a couple of the other things that were added as core functions are not specific to our office or limited to our office. And one of those that I also think is very important and will lend to this effort to achieve consistency in decision-making is what I like to call our mandate to publish administrative decisions. For our own decisions, as well as the decisions we are supposed to gather up from other administrative agencies in the state that do not do their hearings through our office. And there are a number of them. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska, the Workers' Comp Program isn't in our shop, Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, a lot of the Department of Health and Social Services hearing programs, and a whole bunch of others that I won't even take the time to name, will still be done either in-house by other agencies or contracted out, perhaps, in some instances. And we are charged with collecting up their decisions as well, and we kind of construe our obligation to publish decisions and make them available electronically to include those decisions, not just our own. And we're already set up to start in the next couple of weeks publishing our own decisions to the Office of Administrative Hearings webpage. The technology set up, we just have to get a few decisions scanned in and put our own priority on getting those posted to the web. So you'll see those popping up before too long, and then eventually we will get to the point where we can add other agencies' decisions to that as well. So that's one thing we've actually found quite easy to get organized. Surveying hearing participants for the purpose of monitoring the effectiveness of the hearing process is something that we haven't had an opportunity to get very far down the road in yet, other than me conducting some informal interviews with people who appear before the various hearing bodies frequently. But we are working on a sort of a multi-directional attack on that to come up with a survey form that can be completed electronically online to solicit survey responses by mailing out to prior hearing participants and encouraging them to respond. And this is another one of the functions that goes beyond our office. You can imagine that for our own office and coming up with a mailing list and getting surveys out and getting survey data back will not be that huge of an undertaking, but to try to do it so that it touches the hearing functions in the other departments is going to be a pretty big undertaking. But we're working on it, and I'm confident that we're going to get some good information back as a result of that, so that in future annual reports to the legislature and the governor, we will have the benefit of the input from the hearing participants when we make any recommendations for statutory changes. And then finally, there's the training function, which is a little bit near and dear to my heart, having been a law school teacher all those many years ago, as well as having started my legal career training hearing officers. So this brought me full circle, and it was one of the great attractions to me in this program is to have a mandate from the legislature to not just train ourselves so that we have consistent decisions, but to make training available to all administrative adjudicators in the state system, which to me means not just other hearing officers, but it also means the final decision makers, the boards, the commissions, the principal agency heads, and to the people who feed appeals into us, the staffs of the department that have informal conference resolution of matters and then a party appeals and they come up to us. We have a mandate, I think you've given us, that it's broad enough for us to provide training to all levels, make it available anyway, whether they'll make use of it is another question, but to make training available to a broad range of folks involved in the administrative adjudication process. And we're going to go at that in a number of ways. Some of the simpler, more cost-effective ways, such as email mailing lists of new developments in administrative law or procedure, all the way to the other end of the spectrum in terms of offering formal courses. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, how we're beginning to implement the functions in addition to our core function, the hearing function, which is continuing to go along just fine, as far as I can tell. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We have questions. And one of the hopes is that we've got this earlier process we heard about where we get a look and we can shape regulations a little bit to get a better product. These independent hearing officers, the hope was that if you've got poorly drafted regulations, the hearing officer is not feeling pressure from the agency in which they reside, and the agency is going to lose. And it's going to be on the grounds that the regulations are poorly drafted. You can't determine what exactly they direct you to do. And after losing a few times, if that's what happens, they'll write tighter, better regulations. And then all the training for consistency, too. We just found there's a lot of a disparity from one agency to the next on the way they conducted hearings, the level of training, the level of pay, and we just wanted to bring some consistency to that with the implementation of this act. Okay, if there are no questions, thank you very much. Terry, actually, do you know, has anybody... There was the third piece of legislation that was signed into law that allowed people who get sometimes caught in this round-the-round, never-ending circle in regulatory process, can't get a decision, that they could petition the court to have themselves plucked out of the regulatory process and they'd argue their case in court. Are you aware, has anybody utilized that mechanism?
Mr. Chairman, not that I've heard about, but I haven't actually investigated. And that's among other things that we're going to be doing in terms of tracking appeal decisions up through the court system. That's one of those things that I think unless you hear about it anecdotally, it's going to be a little bit difficult to put the wheels in motion to track it, but it is probably something we should try to track and see how often that device has to be resorted to, because that will, I think, influence some of the decisions we might make about the hearing processes.
And in a conversation that I had with you earlier, just asking you about setting up shop and implementing things, did you find any little glitches in the legislation? You'd indicated that there was one or two things, but you thought you could flesh them out with regulations as you adopted your reg packages. Have you found anything that really you think rises to the level that it requires a legislative fix?
Mr. Chairman, no. At this time, we don't feel the need to recommend a legislative fix.
Any other questions? We also have Robert Pearson here from the Lieutenant Governor's Office. As you saw from the earlier flowchart, the Lieutenant Governor's office has resides in a couple of these boxes here, and I just wanted to see, Robert, did you have any comments to make, or are you just here strictly to answer questions?
I just answer questions.
Did anybody have any questions with regards to the function of the regulatory approval that the Lieutenant Governor? Seeing none, then I think that will conclude our meeting for today. We have turned in a schedule for a meeting on Tuesday and Thursday of next week. On Tuesday, Senate Bill 12, dealing with innocent restrictions to certain nations. That is the sale into slavery bill that Senator Bryson has introduced. Senate Bill 76, which deals with elections. Then on Thursday, we have a Department of Administration overview on the impact of House Bill 242, which was passed in 2001. That is the program by which some state employees retire and they come back to work under contract. That law has a sunset date of this year, so there's legislation in the system to extend that sunset. But I wanted to have a little bit of discussion on exactly the number of people that have been hired back under that and what that means to the state budget. And then we've also got listed on Thursday bills previously heard in case one of the bills on Tuesday, we might have to come back with the CES on Thursday. So with that, we are adjourned for today.